Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Pola sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking White Sox and Cubs getting awfully close to the start of the regular season. We've got a little bit of Hawks talk. We got a little bit of Bears talk. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. This season, we are winding down the season. So if you want to see some good old-fashioned hockey action, and, you know, because you're going to lose out on it during the summer, and you're going to be like, oh, man, I really miss hockey. Get your fill now. Head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how have you been?
I have been just fine. Really enjoyed the weather over the weekend. Sunday was really, really nice, and I can't complain about that one bit. Obviously, I could complain a lot about our sports teams, but that's a whole other issue we'll get to. So otherwise, no complaints here.
Our sports teams are a lot like coronavirus. I'm tired of hearing about them.
Yeah,
they're making
that's
me
true.
Sick. They're making me sick.
They're making us sick, and we want to avoid them, really.
I mean, we're getting close to baseball season here. Should we just kick it off with baseball talk?
We might as well. I mean, it's pretty crazy that just a few weeks away, we're going to be playing baseball. It's pretty early, in my opinion.
What are we, like, two weeks away?
Roughly.
Yeah, it's like, what, the 26th or 26th, something like that. It's like the earliest start to a baseball season ever, I think.
Yeah, and we're 3 weeks away exactly, recording tonight on Monday, from the Cubs' home opener at Wrigley Field. Now, they play a series in Milwaukee before that to open the season. I took the day off, so I'll see if I could try to get tickets or not. I don't know. It might be pretty expensive for opening day, but I might give it a try.
Honestly, with coronavirus, you might get decent prices, because there's going to be people that are like, I don't want to go in the cold and sit next to all these people hacking up a lung, because, you know, in it's funny because even though it's getting close to summer, baseball has started. Chicago weather, you know, there's people that listen to this podcast that are not in Chicago. So maybe you're not familiar with Chicago weather. It's a fickle lady. And to say
yes,
the least.
It is.
And, you know, during the first month and a half of the season, you have no idea what that weather is going to be like. It could be, you know, 78 and sunny and you get a perfect day, but it could start out, you know, in the morning, 70 degrees. And you're like, okay, this is nice weather for baseball. And then it drops down to like 50 degrees and you turn into a popsicle. You know, it's crazy.
And, you know, the other thing too is the Cubs have like a ridiculous number of home games in April. I guarantee you half those get snowed or rained out in some form.
Oh, I have a feeling there's going to be a snow out. I really have a feeling there's going to be a snow out. Because we got no snow.
Remember opening day in 2018 at Wrigley Field was snowed out, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, because we had no snow this winter. And I feel like there's like that last storm of brewing. And then they're going to wait until the Cubs are supposed to be playing at home. And then just, you know, drop a couple inches on it. And, you know, football, you're like, okay, well, you can deal with it because it's football weather. Baseball, nobody wants to go watch a baseball game sitting in, you know, a snow-covered seat.
No, of course not. I mean, especially right off the lake there. And the players don't want to play in it. The fans don't want to watch in that weather. And especially with this coronavirus going around, it's going to be even more off-putting. So, I mean, take that into account as well. I mean, you look at sports leagues around the country, around the world, they're playing with empty arenas. they're having their players not sign autographs or shake hands or give high fives.
The NHL and NBA are, MLB and NBA are not letting the media into the locker room because of the coronavirus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I heard that on the radio the other day.
So, baseball, like, they could have probably flown that under the radar because, you know, the season, you got a few weeks, you can kind of play it by ear. But NBA is, it's, you know, in the thick of things, and they just made that announcement. And that's the right one, I think, but it's still, it's a big deal.
It is. And now this is what I heard. And sometimes I don't know what I believe or not about this coronavirus because I hear so many conflicting things or so many opinions from people I probably shouldn't be listening to. But from what I heard is that this is not really a warm temperature virus, a warm climate virus. If you go down and it's piping hot, like in Miami, where the Marlins play and it's outdoors, or down in Texas where the Rangers play, or even in LA. Now, LA is probably a bit riskier because of the travel that goes on there, but, and I guess you could say Miami too, but I guess in warmer climates, it's not as, it's harder for it to survive, I suppose. But if you are up here in Chicago where the weather is damp and cold, that's where it can survive. So I don't really know if there's anything to that. Like, oh, if you go down to Miami, you'll be fine versus Chicago. I go here at a ball game or whatever. I really don't know. I'm just saying that the combination of the coronavirus plus Chicago weather is really not ideal for April baseball. Heck, go up to Minnesota. That's going to be awful every year. I don't know why Minnesota didn't build a stadium with a retractable roof. I really don't.
There's no retractable roof?
In Minnesota, no. Huh. Not at Target Field.
I thought they did.
Nope.
I've never been to the stadium. I've been outside of it, like literally, on the block and seen it from the outside. I've never been inside. From standing next to it, you can't see what's on the roof.
Yeah, no, they've never had a retractable roof since they built it. It's pretty different from the Metrodome, that's for sure.
And, I was reading actually a virologist from Harvard that was saying about the virus and the warm weather. They don't know. They don't know yet because they said that's what the hope is, that warm weather will mitigate things. But they said they're not what they're seeing so far because they do have outbreaks in South America and in North Africa and Australia.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. So, it is. So they said they're not seeing that. They're hoping once it gets warmer weather in the places where there's the biggest outbreaks, if they see it start to mitigate, kind of like the flu, that they can have time to prepare for next winter. I'm reading that the hope is that it can be kind of like H1N1. Remember a few years ago when the
2009 swine 09, yeah,
that they hope that, it gets to be something like that where they're able to prepare for it, have the vaccine for it, kind of like the flu shot, and keep it in check. But nobody really knows right now because it's so rampant.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you're seeing how sports is affected by it. You're seeing how business is affected by it. You're seeing how travel is affected by it. You're seeing really how the whole world is affected by it. The economy, you look at the supplies that are in the stores being wiped out because of it.
Why is the toilet paper gone?
People are stocking up.
I gotta have my toilet paper.
Yep. John Lackey went with Buttercup and just swiped it all.
He just went and took it out of people's cards.
Coronavirus.
It's like, I'm a Bud Light virus guy. He's like, I'm only drink Coors virus.
Oh, man.
So back to the Cubs. Yeah. So we're not going to have media in the locker room, which I think that'll change come midseason or, sometime around June-ish, I'm guessing, when things have calmed down. But In the time being, you know, we're starting to learn some things about the Cubs. It's looking more and more like Tyler Chatwood is at least going to start the season as the number five starter.
I mean, he's had a nice spring. I think Alec Mills has really stepped up. I mean, you look at the spring he's putting up. He's putting up some really dang good numbers and some really good performances. But, you know, as we've said before, Tyler Chatwood, it's his spot to lose in that rotation.
And I saw a recent quote, and I think it sort of reflects that from David Ross, that, you know, he was saying that Tyler Chatwood has earned that spot, but they, you know, last year, I guess he pitched in all nine of the innings, you know, at some point in the season. So he closed games, started games, did middle relief. And they were saying that they could see him transition over to being the long reliever, the spot starter, and some other things too as the season goes along. And I think that kind of says that they see some of the younger guys, the younger arms maybe, you know, at some point being ready to take over a starting spot. And honestly, Tyler Chatwood was very valuable last year as a long reliever.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I would like him to be in that role. I thought that's where he thrived the best, because if you remember some of those long relief appearances he had to make, whether it was extra innings or the pitcher got chased out early, he did a really dang good job.
Yeah, and I think they kind of want him to start the season as the starter, to take the pressure off of the younger guys, and then maybe transition over. And I think that might be a good spot for him, you know, because he's going to be a free agent after the end of the season, so he can showcase his ability to start. He can showcase his ability to basically pitch from anywhere, and you know, in a game. And I think that makes him valuable. I mean, look at Andrew Miller. He, you know, middle relieving in long reliefs and made a ton of money doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you feel better with him just in a certain situation. Because, you know, I mean, let's face it, we don't forget what happened in the past with him, where when he was a full-time starter, things went completely awry. And he did make some spot starts last year. And if you remember, some of those spot starts were very, very good. He had one against the Angels where it was six shutout innings. But I think there's still kind of that fear or nervousness when he would take the mound as a starter. But when he came in as a reliever, and you know, maybe this is just me, I felt a lot better coming in as a reliever. I just felt more confident in him. And, you know, there's a difference between being a reliever and being a starter. It's not just you start a game versus you come in later. You mentally prepare for it differently. It's in a different spot. And as we've seen case after case every year, some guys are just better coming out of the bullpen.
Right. And for whatever reason. And, you know, we've seen, it's funny, is we've seen guys in the Hall of Fame where they were, I guess you could call them, quote, failed starters, and they found new life as bullpen arms.
Look at Wade Davis.
Yeah, look at Wade Davis. Look at Lee Smith. Look at Dennis Eckersley.
Yep. Yep.
Goose Gossage.
Yep. And those are all Hall of Fame all-star players.
Right. I mean, I think they're all Hall of Fame except for Wade Davis, who's probably going to be.
I mean, Wade Davis, if he could have stayed even better longer, just imagine.
Yeah, so you know, there's that opportunity, and I'm not putting Tyler Chatwood in that that spot, but you know, I'm just saying that they're finding definite value where I think when we signed him to that 3-year deal, it looked like this was a disaster. And
right
now we're looking at him like, man, we're lucky to have him at this point, because he's going to be an important cog in this piece. And you know, that's not to say that he's as important as like a Javi Baez, a Rizzo, or a Bryant. But, you know, in order to be a team that competes for a playoffs or the World Series, you need a lot of contributions from guys that aren't superstars. It's an absolute fact. You can't win a World Series without, you know, the role players doing their part.
Of course.
And so Tyler Chatwood is a guy that's looking like he's going to be, you know, a workman type guy that's going to be very important to this team. And he's going to need to turn in a good season for them to be a good team.
Somebody brought up this question on Twitter the other day. I can't remember who it was. So if you're listening, I'm sorry if you don't get credit. But he said, would you trade Jose Quintana right now and put in Mills and Chatwood as your 4-5? And to me, that sounds tempting. I mean, because one of the things is the whole luxury tax issue of money. And Quintana is making like, what, $11.5 million, $10.5, $11.5, something right there?
It's at least 11, but it's somewhere around there. So 11, 11.5, somewhere around there.
Right. So, I mean, if you flipped that and, you know, you freed up some of that money that you're desperately trying to get back for whatever reason, even though you're the freaking Chicago Cubs, you know, would you personally, would you trust Mills and Chatwood to be the 4-5? Because, I mean, I know Quintana has been inconsistent and overall disappointing, but the one thing you can depend from Quintana is 30-plus starts a year. You look at last year's numbers, the ERA was much different than the FIP. The FIP was 380. A 380 FIP in a juice ball era, I'd say it's a pretty good job as like a four-starter. You know, obviously, he didn't get the job done at the end of the year, and he still had some inconsistencies, but he's a durable pitcher that will have more good starts than bad. I mean, those are big shoes to fill because I think Alec Mills has a lot of promise, but we've yet to see him make more than just a few spot starts in actual MLB games. And Tyler Chatwood, well, we've seen the goods and a lot of the bads, and you see the potential for the good, but, you know, you're not exactly sure what you're going to get out of him if he is a full-time starter. Again, I think he's better in the bullpen, so it may seem like a great idea right off the bat, but there's a lot of risk with that too.
It also comes down to, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, well, do you just trade him? What's the trade market look like? What are you going to get for him? And if you're not going to get any sort of value from trading him other than getting under the luxury tax and giving some more starts to Alec Mills, then no, not worth it. I mean, you've got a guy who, you know, he's had a solid career so far, and he's in a contract year. So you probably, you know, conventional wisdom is going to tell you that he's probably going to try to put in the best year he can to make that money.
Right.
So if you're not going to get a solid return for him, then you might as well keep him, unless it's something where, you know, you totally expect to suck this year and prepare for next year. And if that's the case, then might as well. But I don't see them. I see them as still believing they can win this division, and you have a much better chance of doing that with Jose Quintana in your rotation.
What I am kind of curious to think about, and this is just kind of how I see it, I think right now the plan would be to keep him, but look at the New York Yankees. They lost one of their starters for the season. They have had an unbelievably piss-poor track record of injuries the past few years. And Quintana has been so durable in his career. Would it be tempting for the Cubs to kind of dangle him in front of them? The Yankees have unlimited resources. Now, what the Yankees are willing to give him, I don't know, but I'm just saying.
The Cubs, I don't think, are going to make any sales now, but
right,
once we get closer to the trade deadline, I honest to God feel that the Cubs are going to make some tough decisions if they're not in the hunt or in a lead. If they're, you know, trailing by a significant number of games, you know, 8 games, 10 games at the trade deadline, they're going to move a guy like Quintana because he's going to be a free agent. They're going to move guys that are expiring contracts. They might even move Absolutely. A guy who is, quote, essential part of the team. I honestly feel
like
that
a
they'll
Wilson
move them
Contreras.
To, yeah. If they're out of it come the trade deadline and somebody is a, catcher down and they're waiving all kinds of prospects, believe you me, the Cubs will seriously consider trading Wilson Contreras.
Well, yeah, and especially considering that the Cubs system is very deep in terms of catcher. I mean, look at Victor Caratini. He is showing a lot of promise right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Wilson Contreras is both a very important cog to this team and a luxury as well.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking about this too. Going into the season, you have a number of guys on expiring contracts. You know, not just Quintana, not just Tyler Chatwood. You have a few other guys as well. But are you going to get those contract year performances from those guys, like you just mentioned? And I want to say optimistically, yes, but I just really don't know. It would just be really in best interest for the Cubs if they're not in contention that they are, because if you can flip them and get value for them, it's kind of weird. I'm going to the season thinking the Cubs have just as good of a chance to win the division, in my opinion, as they do to completely falter. I feel like it's a complete coin flip right now. And I'm looking at the season, looking at a number of guys, thinking, okay, they're either on expiring contracts or like they have another year after this year. I'm talking like Quintana, Chatwood, also like Craig Kimbrell is a big one. Some of the other relievers they have, like if Jeremy Jeffress has a good year, he's on a one-year deal. If Steven Souza has a good year, he's on a one-year deal. Isn't
Lester on the last year of his deal too?
Yeah, but he's got a bunch of no trade clauses and whatnot. I mean, it's. I think there's technically a mutual option after this year, but I think it's probably his last year here.
I would imagine that mutual option is probably a big chunk of change.
Oh, it is. It is. I've looked at SpotCheck before. It is. But my whole point is, I'm looking at the season. I'm looking at those guys, and I am praying that they have good seasons. And right now, it's in my mind. I'm thinking less of, oh, I want them to have good seasons because they'll help the Cubs win. I'm kind of in the mindset where I'm like, I hope they have really good seasons because they might have trade value if they're not in it. Because if they don't have trade value and they're not in it, it's like you're kind of screwed.
You know, it's funny you say that they have probably just as good of a chance to do really well as they do to sucking. And honestly, though, I see this team as, for them, you have to define sucking. I don't think there's any way this is a last place team. I look at them as sucking as third place in this division and missing the playoffs.
Right. I see like third place and like 82 wins. That's where I see sucking with this team.
Yeah.
Unless
82,
there's a million injuries. Unless there's a million injuries.
I even consider that, you know, we're in, no matter what the reason, injuries or just not playing well, I see that all as rolled into it. Because everybody has injuries. The Yankees had injuries last year and, you know, look where they went. You got to be able to overcome those. But it's, for the Cubs, I see that as the floor. And I don't see a ceiling, you know, so I have a fairly high floor, but the ceiling I also think is fairly low. So for them, it's, you know, me bad best, you win one series in the playoffs.
It's really hard to imagine this team beating the Dodgers in a championship series.
Yeah. So I see them as floor being third place, missing out on the playoffs by a couple games, being in the hunt, but missing out and then peaking at winning one round in the playoffs. That's sort of where I see their window.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it, too. I don't think any way I look at it and see a World Series victory. I mean, baseball's strange. Anything can happen, but it's really not where I see it right now.
Oh, absolutely. Anything can happen. It's just, you know, statistic. I mean, that's not, I didn't do any math here statistically, but you know, that's the probably 80% probability rating in there. And then there's always that chance of an outlier where they, everything, you know, they're playing bad and then KB gets hurt and, you know, everybody just bottoms out and then they, you know, other teams have some good years and they fall to fourth or fifth. Or, you know, the Dodgers have a really down year and the wheels come off there and the Cubs just go on this miracle run like the Cardinals that from a few years ago where they, it's more than a few now, where they went from the wild card dead in the water to just running the table.
You know, if Carlos Marmol didn't blow a save against the Cardinals late that season, the Cardinals would not have even gotten to the playoffs.
Oh, Marmol.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else with the Cubs? Second base competition. You know, I think it's really rolling into splitting time, platooning with Bodie and Kipnis.
For now, yeah. Nico Horner will be up at some point, but
yeah, that's they're placeholding. You know, any of the other options that anybody could have considered at second base, not happening.
Right.
Descalso is terrible.
Yeah. Ugh.
I mean, he's you know, when you say that he's great if you like puke. But he's not even like a funny kind of puke. He's like that Buffalo Bills fan puke.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh, just sitting there with the mouth, with like his mouth and his fist, and it's just water falling out. Oh,
it's a don't go chasing waterfalls, and he's puking all down his shirt.
Oh God, yeah, it's, I mean
Descalso.
I hate to say it because he's a great guy, but oh, he can't hit anything. He's just washed, man.
No, like honestly, it's like somebody won a competition from the stands to go in there and take some at bats.
That's like how bad. Will Ferrell played.
Yeah, when he played with Oakland, or he played for how many teams?
He played for like everyone in the Cactus League, including the Cubs. He would be at a game. He would like play in the outfield for like an out or two, and then he'd go to the other dugout, put on their uniform, and take an at bat.
Yeah, Will Ferrell. Yeah, that's pretty much what it's like. He's just not good. That was a bad contract.
Yeah, I mean, you got him. Hernan Perez can't hit, which you can't really expect. I think Hernan Perez was just kind of brought in. His one asset is right. That's what I'm saying. Like he wasn't really expected to hit. So, I mean, yeah. And, you know, I wrote an article about who's hot, who's not just yesterday going into yesterday's games. You know, another guy I included on the who's not, including Perez and Descalso, I mentioned Jason Kipnis. And the defense looks good. The presence is good. He's not really hitting well. But I think they brought him in specifically to hold the platoon role. And I think he's going to keep that job. I don't see them cutting him before the season starts. Maybe down the road if he's struggling and Horner comes back up. But I think he's going to be on the opening day roster. I think it's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, I think so. He's a veteran presence. He's going to help the platoon and hold that spot down for Nico Horner.
And at least he can pop you a home run every now and then.
Right, right. And then we've got the Castellanos comments. I'm sure you read those.
I did not, actually. Enlighten me.
So they were talking to him, and he said, I guess he had no ill will towards the Cubs, but he said, I don't know the intricacies of owning a team. The only thing I can speak on when it comes to the Cubs is what a tremendous and incredible soul that organization has when it has life. The only thing I would care about if I owned the Cubs would be to give as much life as possible. It's hard. I don't know what it's like to own a business.
Hmm. Very interesting.
I mean, it was the most, I mean, there's definite some criticism in there, but said in a very nice way. Like it clearly he doesn't harbor any ill will towards the Cubs, but I don't, you know, like the rest of us, he doesn't understand the not putting everything towards winning.
Right.
And yeah, none of us can explain it either, Nick. we're at a loss too, you know. The Cubs had to pay like $2 million in luxury tax, or $4 million or something. Whoop-de-doo. This franchise is worth billions of dollars. That's a drop in the bucket.
We need more pumpkins at Gallagher Way.
At Gallagher Way. Wait, I just got an email about Gallagher Way like the other day.
I get those all the time.
Yeah, the Gallagher Way emails. Gallagher Way.
Come get more Ricketts pumpkins at Gallagher Way.
God. There's a new yet familiar restaurant concept in town. Swift and Sons at Tavern at Gallagher Way. If you have not heard the good news already, we're writing to tell you about the restaurant located at Clark and Addison in Gallagher Way. Formerly known as Dutch and Docks, is now officially Swift and Sons Tavern.
Woo!
Complete with oyster bar. We just won the off-season.
The oyster shells are shaped in my face.
You wanted Nick Castellanos? Well, you got oysters.
I'm quoting you on Twitter. Oh, that is wonderful. That is the best thing I ever heard.
Who needs championship when you've got Swift and Sons?
We got you. We got you. We got you your championship. Now you can have your oysters.
Yeah, you've got oysters in the summer, and you'll get pumpkins in the fall. What else could you need? Nick Castellanos. Who's ever heard of a Castellanos? But a Swift? Is he a Swifton son?
Does he bring you oysters?
Oh, God. This team. Yeah, so, you know, he's got a point. He's got a point. Like, he doesn't understand. There's a, you know, this team at the core could win. They just need some help. And the Cubs just chose not to help them. And, you know, what did they spend in guaranteed contracts this offseason? Like $2 million?
Yeah, I mean, they gave Souza a major league deal.
But that was like $1 million.
That was like $1 million.
Jarrell Cotton.
Was Jesse Winkler a major league deal?
I can't remember.
Cause was Jeremy Jeffress minor league or major? I can't remember. I mean, I know Kipnis was a minor league deal. Who else? There was another notable minor league deal. Well, I mean, Carlos Asuaje doesn't really count. Obviously, Hernan Perez was an invite to spring training. They really didn't do much. Yeah, they spent more in arbitration money than free agents.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Man, so I'm looking through here, and Winkler was a one-year contract. They brought in Cotton. They claimed Pelham off of waivers. And I guess they traded for Cotton, so that was...
yeah, that was a trade.
Signed Winkler to a one-year deal. Signed Brandon Morrow to a minor league contract.
Which he's probably never going to play.
Probably not. Let's see, Cuevas and Perez, minor league contracts. Miller, minor league. Tepera, free agent. And those are all arbitration. Adam was a minor league deal. Olson, minor league. Fagley, minor league. Trade, minors. Souza was a one-year deal.
Right.
So they spent like $2 million.
They spent as much money in free agency that Daniel Descalso is making this coming year.
That's sad. That's really sad. So yeah, and I mean Castellanos's comments ring true to the rest of us. We would love to see this young core be able to thrive and keep this window open, but you know, we need
oysters.
We need oysters. But on the other side of town, they don't seem to have these problems because they are locking everybody up to team friendly deals.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it, but it's pretty remarkable.
Since our last show, we were talking about the rumors of them signing an extension to Yoan Moncada, and they did so, and for a lot less than we were expecting. We were expecting like $100 million?
Yeah, something like that.
70.
How? How did they do it?
It goes, if they pick up the option in 2025, it goes to $95 million then total. So
still, that's under $100 million.
It's under $100 million. So now I'm hearing rumblings about a Lucas Giolito extension. But they've got Moncada signed to an extension, Aaron Bummer, Luis Robert, Jose Abreu, Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson, all signed.
Good work on them, honestly, on Rick Hahn and that organization. Again, I don't know how they did it, but they did it, and they've done an amazing job for them. And it's, you're in a position where it's either going to work out great or it's not a big deal if it doesn't. And I believe that these deals are going to work out for the better. I mean, I really do. They're all talented players. I don't see any of these guys being major busts whatsoever. So, I mean, you're getting great value for what could be a potential group of stars that wins you multiple championships.
Your window is a long time right now without breaking the bank. And the thing is, you sign these guys to extensions, you are set. You know what your budget is, you know, and this is a budget friend or budget conscious organization. So you know what you're spending, you know what you have available left to spend. And your payroll was nothing going into the season. So really, you still have financial flexibility after signing all these guys.
And, you know, they were good with this before this whole rebuild. Because remember, Quintana and Sale, it was the same situation with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, if things go awry, you've got these team-friendly contracts with players that you can flip and jumpstart
Hopefully it doesn't get to there with them, but I'm just saying,
the wheels come off, you know, you are not locked into these bad contracts.
No, you're not. These are very, very friendly contracts. It's not like, you know, there are these ridiculous albatross extensions. I mean, it's not like, you know, I mean, obviously I think you give Bryce Harper what he was worth as a free agent, but I mean, I'm just saying, if you gave Bryce Harper money to one of these young guys, that would be insane, but that's not even close to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the White Sox payroll for this year, and it's significantly more than it was last year, but it's looking like it's $128 million with everybody signed to an extension.
Wow.
And that's after they just signed Yasmani Grandal, Dallas Keuchel, extension to Jose Abreu, signed Encarnacion. They've got a lot of money still left that they can play with.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to make any more moves, but yeah, they certainly do, especially for the future. I mean, this organization is going to be such in a great place, and I mean, honestly, good on them. Good on them. It's going to be good for the city of Chicago. It's going to be good for baseball. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in a few years. You know, we're worried about a strike and whatnot, but they'll have these guys locked up, so it's not something they really need to worry about.
I take that back. It's $120.7 million.
Okay, well then there you go.
And The average payroll is 160. They're 40 million under the average payroll.
That's incredible.
And then you look at what did they have on the books for next year?
There's only a few key guys that are under contract only this year. I mean, Encarnacion.
Next year, they drop down to $114.5 million. Gets
lower. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's incredible.
Yeah.
That means it's just smart. And, you know, so, I mean, looking at a Giolito extension, I'm hearing rumblings of somewhere around like a Quintana deal, 4-year, $45 million.
I haven't heard that rumor yet.
Yeah, I've heard it. That's a rumble, but we'll see. I would be shocked if it's not coming soon.
I mean, every rumble has turned into reality, so.
It really has. And it's been smart realities. It's not like out from left field. It's smart reality. This team is young, hungry, talented, and signed to team-friendly contracts.
Yeah, and they are going to have a very nice long window of contention.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's exciting for them. I mean, they haven't been in the playoffs since 08, and it's been a long time coming for them. We'll see what they do this year. I mean, I think they'll be in the playoffs this year. I really do. I think, I mean, first of all, you have three terrible teams in that division, and I don't think the Twins are going to be as good as they were last year. So I think now's the perfect time for them to take advantage. And if you get a taste of winning now, you're only going to go up from there.
Yeah, I mean, because they're going to be able to beat up on some bad teams in their division, pad that win total. So you've got a team that I think is going to be pretty good. You're going to be able to pad your win total because you're in a bad division. And your probably biggest competition in that division is, I think, ripe for a setback from last year. So
absolutely.
It's shaping up. You know, everything's coming up Milhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as long as everyone gets healthy in camp right now, then I think you're feeling pretty good about your health. It seems like for the most part, there have been a few nagging injuries here or there with some of the guys, but I think that overall they're feeling pretty good about themselves.
Absolutely. You have to feel good if you're the White Sox organization or if you're a White Sox fan. You know, this is your year. I think we're going to see a nice turnout at opening day too. And it's going to reflect the excitement, because we've seen opening day the last however many years just, you know, mediocre crowds at best.
Well, yeah, I mean, last year there was a lot of anger and disappointment missing out on Manny Machado, which is understandable. And I mean, it also doesn't help when the weather is such shit. But yeah, it's, I think this year, no matter what, they're gonna sell that place out. I think it's gonna be a packed house there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's funny is they kind of lucked out not signing Machado.
Well, I'd argue otherwise, but I can see why you'd say that.
I mean, so you've got third base locked up in Yoan Moncada.
Right.
Who had a better year than Machado.
Which is fair.
Tim Anderson at short, who had a breakout year last year. And you're place holding at second base for Madrigal, who you're very excited about. So where does Machado play?
I don't know. I feel like if you had to shift a few things around to fit Manny Machado, a perennial all-star, I think you'd do it happily.
Maybe dodging a bullet or whatever was a little harsh. I'm just saying is by
they could make it work
him,
without it
by not signing him. If had gave them a little more financial flexibility to sign these extensions, you know, they don't have that gaping hole that he would fill. You know, you've got a DH now, you've got your infield full. You know, so he's not filling a glaring need like he would have last year.
Right, and that's fair, and that's fair, and I get what you're saying. I'm just always of the mindset of, and this is just me, never be happy and miss out on an established superstar.
Right, and...
And that's and one of the reasons I have that opinion, I'm just saying, is I remember thinking in 2010, 2011, oh, this Bulls team is so much more balanced. We didn't need Bosch or LeBron, and then I immediately ate my words.
True. But, you know, the nice thing about not having a guy making that much money is if he bottoms out, and that's a big, you know, probably does not happen, but if he doesn't live up to that contract, a contract for that much money for that many years is tough to move.
It is. It is. And that's fair. That's fair.
So, you know, when you're a big market team, the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, they can, you know, they might not like it, but they can live with those. If they sign a long-term bad money contract, they can live with it. The White Sox, I think it's a lot harder for them to live with if somebody doesn't just crush it and make it worthwhile for that contract, for the lifetime of that contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, and I definitely believe that it's reasonable to sit there and say the position they're in financially is just superb, and it probably wouldn't be that way with Manny Machado. And, you know, maybe in the long run, it's just not going to really matter not having Manny Machado. But, you know, it's something you can't dwell on either way. I mean, it didn't happen, and you're building a great team now. So, you know, it is what it is, and it might be in a really good spot in a year or two. Or this year, rather.
Yeah, and, you know, Manny Machado, I guess he had a better season than I expected. He had a 3.1 WAR last year.
Yeah, I also maintain the belief that San Diego, that stadium, and just that team in general was not the best fit for him. But, you know, that's just an opinion.
True, true. But Yoan Moncada last year had 5.7 WAR, F-WAR.
Yeah, he's going to be a superstar. He might be an MVP or multi-time MVP someday.
Between Robert and Eloy and Moncada.
That's going to be the best lineup in baseball, honestly, I think in a year or two. Absolutely. At least one of the best.
I totally agree.
I mean, I'll say it as a Cubs fan. It's going to put the Cubs team to shame. I truly believe that.
Agreed, 100%. Sad, but I agree.
And I mean, I thought a few years ago that this Cub team was going to go on and have a longer window. But honestly, I think that dynasty we were supposed to be, I think that's going to be on the sell side. And I say that as a diehard Cub fan. Now, I don't know for sure. Nobody knows for sure. They still have to go out and prove it. I mean, they still do. But, you know, I think there's just so much potential there. There's more potential there than the Cubs ever had. And the Cubs had a lot of talent.
Agreed. But, absolutely agreed.
But again, it's a lot of things are going to have to go right, and it's hard to win multiple championships. And you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I see this rebuild. I remember how much talent the Cubs had, and I'm like, wow, we got a lot of talent. I just look at the White Sox pool, and I'm like, wow, this has even more talent than we ever had.
It's true. But it's hard to win a championship. So, I mean, they're setting themselves up. The best way you can in baseball, you just do your best to win the regular season, get in the playoffs. And then after that, it's, you know, the more opportunities you have to at the bites at the apple, the more chances you have to, you know, the better chance you have to win a title. You saw the Braves, how many years in a row did they win that division? How few titles did they have in that run? So, you know, the best you can do is get to the playoffs, and then it's kind of a crapshoot from there.
Yeah, as long as you give yourself a chance, you have a chance, and that's what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, NHL, NBA, NFL, you have a lot easier road when you win the division, you win, you know, you're great in the regular season to win the title. Baseball is just a crapshoot. The playoffs are just an absolute crapshoot.
Yes, it's... A lot has to go right in a playoff run. I mean, look at the Cubs. That was a really talented team. They were the best team in baseball. But like most other teams that win a World Series, you got to have a little bit of fortune mixed in there too.
That was a lot of luck winning that World Series.
And you could say the same thing in 2005 for the Sox. Both teams, when they won their World Series, they played well, they had things go their way, and that's just sports.
True.
That's just how sports is.
Bears, I don't have a lot to talk about, but the CBA, there's talks of them voting on the new CBA soon. I think this week or next week. And, you know, whether that CBA gets signed, I think is going to really impact how much money teams are spending. You're seeing a lot of rumors about if the CBA is not signed, teams are holding back versus, you know, the other way around. But right now I'm hearing a lot of rumblings of teams going after high price, free agent offensive linemen. And it's not, I guess, a hard concept to grasp, but it impacts the Bears because I think they need to rebuild that offensive line.
Absolutely.
And they, you know, while they're not poor and they're not, struggling to, you know, get to the salary cap number, they just don't have the huge salary cap space that some of the other teams have to bid on some of those big name free agents.
Right.
So it's, you know, I think we're going to have to see some fairly high draft picks used on offensive linemen. Maybe some, under the radar veterans. I'm hearing Jason Peters might not be back next year with the Eagles, and he's old, but he really hasn't dipped that much in his productivity.
No, he's still playing very well.
You know, that might be, if you kick him over to the right side, that might be, you know, a nice placeholder for a bit to help a young offensive line. We saw what Fred Miller did for the Bears, bringing him over. We've seen some history of Bears bringing in older offensive linemen to help anchor a line and grow. And that's not a bad option, and he's not going to command a long-term contract because I think he's 36 or 37, so he doesn't have that many years left. But the Eagles, I think, are going to move on from him, and, you know, you can get him for, I think, a fair deal that's short. That might be the option. You draft a right tackle, and, you know, suddenly your offensive line solidifies.
Yeah, it's something they desperately need. It's something that, I mean, not only do they need it for their quarterback, but for their run game too. I think that's one of the biggest priorities going into this offseason, is fixing that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody wants to just jump on that color. They want to jump on Trubisky and beat him up and say that's the sole reason that the Bears struggled. No, there's a lot of reason the Bears struggle, and I think you can do good things with Mitchell Trubisky as your quarterback. And I'm not saying that he's an elite quarterback. I'm just saying is he's Ryan Tannehill's not a very good quarterback, and we've seen a whole career of that. But he had a good year because they put a system in place. They didn't ask him to do a ton. They protected him with a good offensive line, and they had the best running attack in the game. And you saw good things out of him. He just made good decisions, and he when the play broke down, he scrambled and picked up plays with his feet. That's what you can do with Mitch Trubisky. If you're the Bears organization and you don't believe in him, then you know what? You pick up that option, and you scale back the playbook and make him a game manager and build the team around him. So you have a better running game, better offensive line, and let him pick up first downs with his feet, because 2 years ago when he had an okay year, his best plays were with his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the thing you can do. It's last year he didn't run really, and you saw the Bears struggle. You keep plays alive with his feet and keep series alive, and keeps the play clock running. It keeps the defense off the field, limits the other team's offense from getting on the field. Just, you know, you can build around a mediocre quarterback. It's, you don't have to solve this offense. You don't have to solve this issue now, but you know, it all starts with better play calling, call to the strengths of the team you have, and build that offensive line. Build it.
Yeah.
And another thing is, you know, we're sort of a wide receiver short, because we just cut Taylor Gabriel, and we've missing that speedster guy. And honestly, I'm not sold on this idea, but I'm of the mind is, why don't you give an opportunity to Tariq Cohen to play more wide receiver? You see what they do with Tariq Hill in Kansas City, and his speed creates mismatches. You know, Tariq Cohen is not as fast, but he's still a very fast guy. He's got good hands. Is you know, get him to be a better route runner. Work with him on that. Give him the off season. You know, and try to bring in another running back to take that running back spot. It's much easier to find a solid running back than it is a solid wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to do certain plays like screen passes and get a little fancy there, I think that's what we could use Cohen for. I don't want Trubisky thrown to him downfield with his size.
Yeah, but, you know, he's shown, I mean, if you underthrow it and you make a jump ball, trouble. You know, you're having some issues there. But if you can get him on the run, he's got really good hands. And he's going to get separation from the cornerback. I'm very confident of that. You got to hit him. Got to hit him in stride, though. But I mean, you know, if you could get him on a skinny post, something
that worries me with Mitchell Trubisky, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, if you could get him on a skinny post, and then once he catches it, that's, you know, give him room to run. That's the thing. You look at Tariq Hill and. You saw great things with him. It created these big explosive plays because you got him. You got a playmaker of the ball.
Right.
You know, they don't have another. You know, you can't teach speed. You could teach a lot of things. No. You can't teach speed.
And you can't rely on Lionel and Robinson to do everything.
Absolutely. Other than that, you know, the free agency is opening up soon. We got the draft like a month and a half away. So it's that slow time in the NFL season right now where it's just Tom Brady rumors running amok.
And they're not with the Bears, so who cares?
Yeah, he's not going to the Bears.
No.
So yeah, we'll see. That legal tampering period in the NFL is coming up. Actually coming up pretty quick. What is the date on that? NFL agency start is next week.
Already. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So yeah, we got free agency starting up, and I don't see the Bears jumping out that opening couple days when all the big money contracts, you know, 4 minutes after the league season starts and free agency opens up and you've got a guy who signed an $100 million contract and you're like, how did they negotiate a $100 million contract in 4 minutes? Like, how did that happen? You know, that's totally bypassing the rules. But I don't see the Bears being in that you know, opening window of the big money deals. But I see them being very active in that.
They'll be aggressive,
those middle free agents. You know, maybe they make a splash and they sign an Austin Hooper in that opening couple days. But other than that, I don't really see a big splash. I think it's going to be a lot of mid-level contracts and build from there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I see it too.
I guess the only other thing I wanted to talk about is the Blackhawks. I saw an article and it really reflected what I was thinking the other night when Boqvist got injured by the dirty hit. And Sundqvist, who, you know, the guy, Oscar Sundqvist, who, you know, was trying to, he left his feet, missed the check, and then grabbed Boqvist by his face and threw him to the ground or to the ice, and he got a $5,000 penalty. And, you know, I was basically saying, you know, and the article reflected that, you know, exactly, is if the league is serious about preventing injuries and trying to keep players safe, then why aren't they sending a message with these dirty hits and letting everybody know that's not okay and we're putting the hammer down on it when you do those dirty hits? You know, there's,
yeah, I mean,
there's
5K is nothing to these guys.
For a guy that's making $2 million a year, 5K is absolutely nothing. And, you know, there's plenty of room in the NHL for hard hits, clean hits. But dirty hits, you know, guys get really hurt. And if you are serious about protecting players, is you can't allow shit like that to happen.
No. No, you can't. And, you know, you look at the punishments, whether they're fines or suspensions, and, you know, a lot of these are fairly underwhelming, and this was one of those moments.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it really seems like it has to be a superstar that gets hurt or a known offender that's doing the hit in order for there to be any sort of consequence.
Right.
And, you know, that's been a big knock on the NHL since I was a kid. You know, I remember probably in my 20s, you know, seeing a thing where somebody was like, here's the flow chart to how, you know, they come up with a suspension. You know, was it the superstar that got hurt? If so, yes, 10-game penalty. And and it's like, was it, you know, was it this goon, one of these goons that did the hit? If so, 10-game penalty. Everybody else, it goes down to 1-game suspension.
Yeah.
It was like, and it's funny because it's joked about for all these years, and it's, you know, I've seen different iterations of that, but it really is true. It really is that just, you know, if it's not a superstar that got hurt and it's not a goon or a known offender, if it's not Rafi Torres or somebody that's committing the penalty, they slap on the wrist.
Pretty much.
And that's frustrating, you know, and it's already a frustrating season for the Blackhawks. We're sitting here, you know, so many injuries. We're sitting 69 games played, so got a handful of games left of the season, and there's 6 points out of the playoffs, and they have to leapfrog 1, 2, 4 teams. So it, you know, the odds of making the playoffs are slim.
Yeah, I'm done talking playoffs. This is not a playoff team. They're too hurt at this point. I mean, look at last night.
They can't even beat the Red Wings.
Oh, I was watching that at a bar with friends. It was just miserable. Thank goodness for Rolling Rock beer, because that was awful.
The only funny part about it is my wife was in Detroit for work, and she stayed at the same hotel as the Blackhawks. And she was leaving to go outside, and she went through these doors, and she walked out, and they had like they had barricades all over the place, and there was like all these Blackhawk fans like mob against the barricades waiting for the doors to open, and she's like, it was me. And she's like, I was like, what is everyone doing? And then, you know, she realized that the Blackhawks were staying there, so everyone was waiting for the Blackhawks to come out.
That's funny.
But yeah, this team is dead in the water.
Last night was just miserable.
Last night was bad. The Red Wings game was bad. You can't have games like that if you were serious about making the playoffs.
It sucks because they just beat up on the Oilers.
Yeah.
And then it just went all downhill from there.
Like it's, it's, you know, mathematically there's a possibility, but it's, it's the way Let's that they've real. Played. They, yeah. If you look at the way they've played, it is, you know, they're so dead in the water.
Yeah. I mean, you can't lose to the Red Wings like that and be taken seriously. The Red Wings are historically bad. You saw what happened when you went up against a really good division foe in St. Louis. St. Louis controlled the game. There was a lot of blue in the stands at the United Center. And I just, it just felt like yesterday it was the other way around. The Blackhawks were the cream of the crop. The Blues had this long Stanley Cup drought. The Blackhawk fans would show up in droves, and I mean, they still do when they play St. Louis, but I never thought I'd see the day where you'd hear Let's Go Blues chants at the United Center.
Yeah, it's sad. It's really sad. You know, there's been a lot of points in this season where I've said, even though they're not playing well, they've been fun to watch. That's really taken a turn, and it's getting to be frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the win against the Oilers was fun. Some of those wins recently was fun. But it's just when you play big games like this, and, you know, whenever they get back into like, oh, you know, they're within the playoffs, they're within arm's reach, every time they have that big game, the past several years, every time they have that big game, reality sets in.
It's so inconsistent. I'm just ready for a wholesale change for this team.
As am I.
You know, at some point you can't just hold steady on your path. You've got to shake things up, and we're at that point.
It's going to come in the off season if it does come. So we just got to get through these last 15 some odd games, however many they have left. And we'll be there.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Yeah, I don't want to talk Bulls. They're angering. My blood pressure.
They're bad. Jim Boylan's bad. Garpak's bad. The only good thing is Coby White. That's it. The end.
And he's at least getting his opportunity to start. So
yeah,
there's small miracles.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn app, Google, or Spotify, on them all. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Make sure you follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I wanna...